This episode of The Bladder Presents is brought to you in part by Feels. That's Feels with an A. Sponsors with a yay help keep the lights on here at Bladder Presents HQ, so keep an ear out for more information and a sponsor code for Feels later in the episode. And said episode starts right now.
On the internet, you get too many cooks in the kitchen, and who doesn't even know what evidence is or what it looks like? That causes a lot of shit on social media.
MTV's Vanguard documentary property True Life returns with a true crime iteration called, unsurprisingly, True Life Crime. But is anything about the show surprising? And is MTV's gift for spotlighting a range of Gen Z experiences and shows from Are You the One to Teen Mom in evidence here? We'll also talk about the somewhat confusingly branded life/love after lockup on WETV, and what these train-wreckily compelling couples tell us about the carceral state, or possibly ourselves. Avenge us on the gram. It's The Bladder Presents, episode 128. Welcome back to The Bladder Presents, a podcast about the true crime that's worth your time. Welcome back, author and my co-conspirator, Piper Weiss. Hello, Piper.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming back to this basic cable wonderland of possibly accidental anthropological insights into crime.
Favorite place to be.
Mine too. Hope everyone packed a lunch. Before we get started, a couple of admin notes. One is that the podcast is off next week, but Best Evidence will be going strong. If you don't subscribe yet, why not today? BestEvidence.fyi. That newsletter will be delivered to your inbox every weekday. Number two, you know who's also never off? The guys doing the demolition next door to me. So if you hear banging, grinding, drilling, or some other euphemistic unpleasantness, I really apologize. It does seem like they're progressing towards quieter things like painting, so hopefully this won't be an issue in future episodes. I appreciate your patience, and again, I apologize. They might be at lunch right now, so let's hurry up and do this. We've got two most wanteds this week. The first is True Life Crime, which premiered on MTV last week. Here's the case file from MTV's landing page. Quote, the new series True Life Crime investigates the most harrowing true crime mysteries, rocking headlines and social feeds. These victims were young. The crimes against them were shocking and haunting questions remain. End quote. The show's premiere involved the case of Kanika Jenkins, 19, who wandered into a hotel's walk-in freezer and died there in September of 2017. What friends and family members called a, quote, lack of urgency on the part of local police when Kanika was reported missing, as well as some suspicious ancillary circumstances, led to protests when the ME classified Kanika's death an accident very quickly, and conspiracy theories have become a social media cottage industry in the interim. I did not watch True Life. I did watch Unlocking the Truth, which was the sort of cold case / wrongful conviction show MTV did for one season, hosted by Ryan Ferguson. I think MTV actually might be perfectly positioned to do something in this genre that is different from what you find on Investigation Discovery or Oxygen. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the premiere necessarily explored that potential fully. Piper, what did you think of the debut episode overall, kind of general impressions?
Yeah, I was surprised that this case was used as the debut episode, just because it is a complicated one, and it doesn't necessarily fit into the classic crime mystery, unsolved mystery
right
genre. And yet at the same time, they have some of these tropes, like the catfish guy serving as an unsolved mysteries type host, you know, kind of appearing from the shadows and being like, I'm the host of, I'm the Chris Morrison. And then following a reporter.
What?
So I mean,
Neve Schulman wishes he were Robert Stack. He will never fill Robert Stack's trench coat.
Oh, I mean, so it's like that weird thing where it's like straddling two worlds. Like, it's not sure what it is. And I think like they are doing something interesting and different and important, but it's still trying to fit into this old school framework a little bit. And it doesn't necessarily need to.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that definitely with the intro, which I don't think we're going to see Neve again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that he might have just been sort of like ported over to let Catfish viewers know like that this could also be for you young people with your TikTok and whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that MTV really is good in other franchises at reflecting without judgment the sort of social and cultural reality of life for millennials and Gen Zers and young people in this country. And I think that as overproduced as the programming can sometimes be, I'm like fascinated by how much like narrative material MTV can gather and produce about life in these United States, basically. So I think they have a real opportunity here to like maybe upend or invert some things about this genre.
Yeah.
With that said, I totally agree with you that there were ways in which they feel seemed afraid to go off script, and set script was a little bit of a problem. Clip two.
Every once in a while, a single news story comes along that rises above all the others and sticks in you like a splinter. You see it, you feel it. It becomes a part of you. And the only way to get it out is to dig deeper.
I mean, that writing is not good. That is your, I think this is the overall host for the series, Domati Pongo. He is very charismatic. This is a young journalist of color who came out of hip hop to become a journalist, which, like, let's have a show about him. That's an interesting story. That is neat.
Yeah.
But I think that he's a good sort of, help me, Virgil, that's it, into these worlds and these stories that you might not necessarily have heard about or that production thought would resonate with the audience that they're trying to get. But I also agree that this choice of topic is a little bit strange because they follow all of the expected beats that you would think of, like Someone Knows Something or one of these podcasts that's like, you know, rag in the tailpipe type of information. Sorry, mm-hmm. Missing Maura Murray, that, you know, they're just trying to eliminate all of the other possibilities. And it does end up seeming like it was an accident. But at the same time, you have the police being kind of cash about checking surveillance footage and like, oh, well, she'll just turn up. It's like, well, you know, her mom and her friends all called you to say that that's not the situation. Maybe light a fire under it.
Right. And we know that like there's a possibility that she could be alive today if they had acted quickly on, you know, on the family concerns. And the show does address that, but it's not a mystery, which is fine. Like this story needs to be told, but it's trying to tell it in a Dateline way a little bit.
Yeah.
And it succeeds when it veers off that course, when it tells you about just like Chicago and the neighborhood she's from and like throwing these parties at hotels because it's safer. And like these are the stories that are really interesting, you know, and that are really about like a larger issue of crime in the area and like young people being not protected. you know, and there's definitely a lot of takeaways, but it gets lost in, you can almost like hear the production, like the network executive notes being like, we need a little bit more of the mystery, you know, like,
yeah, versus just having it be like, let's let whatever law enforcement contact, like, let's let that sort of percolate through the various overlapping stories here. Maybe the issue is actually that it needed to be 2 hours long.
Yes, yes.
And have a little more room for, like, because there's a fairly lengthy stretch in the first half of the episode where they're talking about these, like, this, like I said, cottage industry of conspiracy theories about what happened to Kanika, really. And some of them are really insane and involve, like, an urban legend about organ harvesting. I'll play a clip in a second, but what struck me was, like, there were certain drugs found in her system that her friends and family were like, that's not something that she would take, and they weren't party drugs.
Yep.
Why wasn't this investigated? Like, I don't actually think it's impossible that something was put in her drink that led to this demise that could, you know, mean criminal charges were brought against someone.
Absolutely.
But they sort of fall off of that. And they also are content to stop with the internet theories that, like, welp, internet, isn't it crazy? Like, well, if you're going to bring it up, I think you have to explore this, like, Reddit culture that can curdle so quickly when it comes to, like, people feel like they're helping, but it's actually just bringing more pain to the family and making the theorists sound ridiculous. But anyway, here's clip three.
Some insisted her friends used the money to hire a hitman. Others claimed it was hush money regarding a gang rape that went wrong. And still others claimed it was the going rate for her organs to be harvested.
And that's how they get to do the operation, in that kitchen.
And that her body was later put in the freezer in order to preserve it before selling it on the black market, all for $200.
At the end of the day, it's just like somebody in that room knows what happened to this girl.
Well, and the woman we just heard talking at the end of the clip is captioned as like some kind of social media expert. And it's like, I mean, what did that bring? Like, I think this needed twice as long to marinate and kind of look at the implications of a case like this where the African-American community in Chicago does not trust the police because the police don't try all that hard to solve cases like this. And also, you know, Laquan McDonald et al. But
did it also feel like, I mean, and maybe this is a time constraint and maybe there were more sources that they didn't end up including, but did it feel a little bit like the equivalent of a write around? Like to me, it seemed like they didn't do a lot of original reporting. Like they got the social media influencer to just kind of like give some sound bites. They did an interview with the friend, which is really heartbreaking, but she didn't really she wasn't there to offer new evidence. She's just like, I don't know. She's like, I know people are talking about this stuff, but like I lost a friend, which really grounds it. But like, they don't explore the strange drug in her system. They don't explore whether that is a drug that's like being used to roofie people. They don't like really follow any trails of a mystery that might actually be like, I just got the sense that they were like on a time crunch. So they were like, and then they end up relying like the most like insightful and illuminating reporting, which actually ends up being like, no, you know, all of these theories are debunked. But that reporting came from R.I.P. Zachary Stoner.
Yes. I was just going to say, like, when you look back at the episode, it does seem like he does a disproportionate amount of the heavy lifting in terms of getting access, getting interviews, providing this footage, and then putting a button on, like, just giving you the Occam's razor of the situation. Let me play clip four and then let's keep talking about this.
Once again, this is Chicago. If we have issues, a beef or problems, I'm not going to take you to South Suburb or West Suburb in a public place where cameras are located to kill you or put something in your drink and put you in a freezer. Well, we can just shoot you. Just, you know what I'm saying? This is what we do.
And they, okay, the show, I'm not sure how I feel about this, and I'm pretty sure I don't feel good. The show used that soundbite as like coming up promo material, like all over. Like I saw it during a an episode of X on the Beach, for God's sake.
Oh, geez.
And then that's what happened to him. He just got shot, and his murder remains unsolved as well. And this guy was like 21st century citizen journalist. Like he was going after these untold stories, and I have to wonder if the show wasn't maybe him.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like they had to on the fly, like just adjust their whole idea of the show, because it was pitched as Zach TV comes to MTV and then he was killed.
So they had this footage from him.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, what I was wondering of just like,
I hope that's not true, because that's going to make me even more sad. Sorry, go ahead.
Totally. But of just like, you know, reading about him and his case too, which to my knowledge remains still completely unsolved, even if people kind of have an idea of what happened to him.
Right.
But I'm like, his story is a compelling and important story that needs to be told. And it is a story of, you know, citizen journalism and how journalists are silenced in this country. And it's a story of race, and it's a story of police potentially being, you know, neglecting to or kind of not examining what happened to give peace to the family. I mean, there's so much to his life and his passing that are insane and tragic and important that I was kind of just like, wait, why are we, you know, and you could almost like use his reporting of Kanika's story inside of a larger story about who he was, you know?
Well, I hope a future episode is like, I just wish that if this were the original brief, and like it probably should have been, honestly, but then just tell us that.
Yeah.
Just be like, you know, Pongo is taking the handoff from Stoner, and then episode two is going to be, or like the rest of the season, like we're going to find out who killed Zachary Stoner. Like I would watch the shit out of that. I would work on it for free.
Oh my God.
But and I yeah, mean,
the first episode is like almost like Zachary is the host. And then you realize that he's also a victim, you know, by telling these stories, he put himself in danger, you know, and was like really freaking brave.
But and yeah, I mean, that Chiron came up at the end, which is just over a freeze frame of him during one of his talking head interviews. And they tell you that he died. And I like said out loud, I was like, oh no, like, no. We can't afford that. Like American culture can't afford that.
Yeah.
Please no. And also, really, did you have to jump scare us like that? Like,
yeah,
I was on your side, show. But I guess we'll see. I didn't read ahead to see what else they would be looking at. But again, they sort of start down these side streets that are the most interesting part, and then they turn around and come back out before the next commercial to make it more oxygen-y and more, you know, Aaron Moriarty being like, did you kill your sister? Like, I mean, bless Aaron Moriarty. She is a pro, but I just kind of felt like, and who is brought in to do these talking heads, but like white people.
Exactly. Oh, completely.
Like, not that that private investigator wasn't good or accurate, but it was just a little like, oh, here's an old white guy to tell us for sure what's what. Oh, like, guys.
And in every case, and I almost felt like this didn't even, you know, it was almost just a distraction, where even in this one, there's always like a white guy copying. Like, in my 45 years, I'd never
there's
seen
always a white guy talking.
Yeah.
A history of America.
Yep.
Year zero to the present. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
No, I'd be interested to see like what was on the cutting room floor, and if yes. there were, you know, some really great missed opportunities because the network was afraid to take certain risks or was giving too many notes, you know?
Right. Which isn't something that, like, I don't know, like, they had like an entire season of a dating show that was all gender fluid and non-binary people. Mm-hmm. They don't comment on like thruples and other unconventional relationships with the, you know, biological versus social parents on the Teen Mom franchise. Unless like someone's being a shitty parent, in which case that's what the show is saying and they're not sort of talking about traditional values or whatever.
Right.
And you're also like getting a lot of like not secondhand, but like peripheral commentary about the ripples of the opioid crisis with some of these families. Mm-hmm. And MTV is really good and pretty gentle in terms of like they'll produce the hell out of it. It's not like, you know, it's not really like a transcript of life, but they're trying to give you a snapshot of a situation that actually is without mm-hmm. judgment. This felt massaged in a way that I think MTV is better than that. So
yeah,
I hope we're right that, or that this will sort of return to a like a mean that's a little more like the other documentary programming that they do.
Yeah. And to your point about transparency, I mean, I think that, you know, in the like later seasons of Teen Mom 2, which is the one I follow, they've kind of like leaned into the fact that there are always producers around, and they like reveal the producers and the dynamic between the producers and how these people are living these lives that are, you know, that are in some ways produced that you're watching. And I think that I think that this show could actually really benefit from pulling back a little bit the curtain on how a true crime series is produced.
Yeah.
You know, that's
yeah,
kind
that's
of
an excellent point. That's an excellent point. There is one scene where I think they do a good job of that in terms of just like showing you Pongo showing friends and family or playing the 911 tape. And it's a little less mediated than mm-hmm. you would usually, like, this seemed more like an MTV show or like a sort of Catfish adjacent property than the much more distilled, like 48 hours style.
Yes.
So here's clip 5.
See, this part I don't get. They telling her, like, okay, well, it's only been a couple of hours. Maybe she'll pop up.
Yeah, like,
but y'all waiting on a couple of hours, and when y'all could have just searched the hotel right then.
Because if she was in the freezer for those couple of hours,
maybe they could have saved her if they would have searched the hotel.
Is it possible that they send the police out here and ask them to look at the cameras and see if they've seen her on their cameras?
Even if I did send an officer, it would take a little bit for us to get the camera footage and for us to pass it on to the detectives division.
See, now with that part, he said, even if I do. Mm. What you mean, even if you do? A child missing.
I mean, yeah. Like, I do wish that they had more time and been able to, like, press a little harder on that part of it, which is that the cops are kind of like, well, it's just a hassle for everyone, including you, for us to look for your kid. Like, that's like, not how that works. 911. Fuck's sake. Anyway.
And the hotel even itself kind of being like reprimanding the family for knocking on doors.
Yes, they called 911 to be like, this woman's going door to door. It's like, well. Right.
So they become suddenly criminals, and it's just like a distraught mother. And you have to wonder about just like, you know, race playing a role there too.
Oh, yeah, like, no doubt.
So that's like, I want to interview with the, you know, whoever was on call that night at the hotel and like maybe have them held a little bit more accountable in this show too, you know?
Yeah.
Or be with the mom, you know, and what, and not that these are easy interviews to have and like, you know, and that, and not everyone wants to be interviewed and that's perfectly fine. But of just like, this was I was surprised that this was the case that they're leading with.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit unfinished.
Yeah. Well, this is why, I mean, talk about like horseshit conspiracy theories, like, you know, grain of salt and all that. But this is what makes me wonder whether the initial log line was not Zachary Stoner is going to take over True Life. And then it turned into this. But I completely agree that the way that they, because they do this like not as much on Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant, which is my Teen Mom jam.
Everyone's got to have one.
But yeah, it's true. It's like famous Scientologists. You're allowed to like one. The production is always evident. And it is in some cases, in the case of some of these young families, it is like a relief to the viewer to know that they are there providing that structure, which is not verite, but this is a 16-year-old who refuses to get a paternity test or a job. That, I mean, this whole family really got screwed over by the Sacklers, and I won't get into it because that's a whole other show, but MTV's like willingness to roll with or kind of not deny the artifice, I think would be perfect to send this genre in a different, more interesting direction that's not so predictable and honestly not so focused on fucking white girls who went missing. No offense, white girls and your families.
Right.
Like, best of luck to everyone, and I hope everybody's okay. But MTV is also much more interested in people of color stories than these shows tend to be. So, like, please, run.
Yes.
Run into its arms. So we'll see what happens. Are you going to keep watching it?
I'm definitely going to keep watching it. And I think they're going to have stories that we're not going to hear elsewhere. So that's like,
yeah, agree.
Definitely going to keep watching it. But yeah, I'm also just curious to see how they're going to structure it down the road. And what kind of stories they're going to be telling. I think it'll probably evolve as a show. I think there's a lot of opportunities to evolve. But if MTV executives are listening, of just like a story on Zach Stoner is welcome, I think that needs to have some national coverage.
Same. I would be very interested. And listeners, please give it a try. MTV executives, don't bail on this after a season like you did on Unlocking the Truth, because that one was kind of just figuring out what it was doing, but I don't think it was getting the eyeballs. So, please give this a chance and do what it is that your network does generally so well to give this a voice, because it's good.
Yeah.
Once again, it's called True Life Crime, and it's on MTV Wednesday nights. Before we move on to the second most wanted section, a word from our sponsor, Feels. Are you experiencing stress, anxiety, chronic pain, or trouble sleeping more than once a week? It's not just you. Many of us do, including yours truly. I am a historically anxious person with a ton to do, and sometimes I can't turn my brain off long enough to, you know, get organized to do all the things I have to do. So I was looking for something besides clicking through bullet journal recommendations on Pinterest, that is, that would help. Then I discovered Feels. What is Feels? Feels, with an A, is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. What does Feels do? Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. A few drops of Feels get me focused and help me stop spinning about my to-do list and actually tackle it. Feels is easy to take. You place a few drops of it under your tongue and you feel the difference within minutes. You don't have to prep anything. There's no complicated equipment to set up. It's just a dropper. Cinchy. You can even add it to your morning smoothie if you want. Same process, which is, like I said, not a process at all. It's just a dropper. Feels provides real human support. If you're new to CBD, Feels has a free CBD hotline and text message support to help guide your personal experience. Questions or concerns, an actual person is there. You'll feel better naturally. There's no high with Feels, no hangover, and no addiction. And you'll feel better conveniently. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order that way, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/blotter, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/blotter, BLOTTER, to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/blotter. Thanks, Feels. And now the second most wanted section. Either love after lockup or life after lockup. Piper, you're going to have to help me straighten out which of these franchises came in which order. Here's the case file in the meantime, and then you can try to walk me through this. Whichever section of the franchise we're talking about, it's kind of right there on the tin. But anyway, here is the WE Network's summary. Quote, couples finally meet their fiancé upon prison release. Will their love survive after lockup on the rocky road to the altar? End quote. I realized today that I thought Love After Lockup was the spinoff, but I think it's actually Life After Lockup is the spinoff, and then they keep following some of the couples. Is that right?
That's right. So it's Love After Lockup is the one where you meet the new couples, and you know, each episode someone's coming out of prison and they're meeting for the first time and they're trying life together. And that's like 100 episodes. There's so many episodes in that season.
I was like, so isn't this season started? And I was like, episode 40, what?
Oh yeah. We're just like, there's just like a camera in their car and you just follow the, like, it's just like basically Big Brother. You're just like watching it for 24 hours. It's the most pleasurable thing I find. But then Life After Lockup is the couples who've kind of survived that entire season and okay. are still together. Like the ones that like broke up by the end of the season, they're off. But the ones that survived were following them in Life After Lockup as they like have a kid together, as they're like one got married and but like the ex is still in the picture. It's a lot of stuff.
The ex is like always still in the picture.
Oh God. And the there's a couple where the ex is also just out of prison. It's like, I mean, it's and they're both and everyone's trying to just stay out of prison. But yeah. There's a lot of opportunity for going back to prison in this like heated romantic, you know, televised, reality show situation. It's like next level Springer in a way. Like
I mean, I wanted your take on, because I'd never watched it before. I think I am going to add it to my rotation because I assumed having seen promos in passing that this was the same kind of like marriage boot camp reality family edition, now with more glitter and fighting, that this would just be like deliberately cynical, straight up car wreck TV. Mm-mm. Based on the premise, and that it wasn't necessarily trying to provide commentary on, for instance, the age difference sometimes woman to man in these couples and what that says about a prison pen pal industry that might be preying on certain insecure segments of the population. What it says about the necessity for parolees of having a stable address, of how difficult it is for them to get jobs, that
how hard it is, like if they have a child in another state and they're paroled in another state, how they can't visit their child. I mean, actually, like, things come up that you learn about that, like, you know, you're seeing part of it is like a little bit frothy reality show stuff, but so a lot of it's just like the realities of post-prison life, not, you know, for partners of former inmates, but also for the inmates themselves, and like trying to start up a life again, and like even just like trying to get a car, to get a job, and how there's just like no money there, and you
sometimes
know,
no skills. Like Shane and Lacey,
Shane was like a kid when he
Shane
went, into,
went in when he was like, it was like 2 days after he turned 17, and there is like a whole segment in a recent episode about how he just has no tools.
Totally.
Like anything except drinking Red Bull and vodka out of a giant cup while they're trying to move, starting at like 10:30 in the morning. Like,
because he's also 21. That's the other thing. Just like he's just free for the first time, and he's like kind of a kid, and she's got kids, and she's kind of expecting him to step up to the plate, and you're kind of, you know, it's that thing where I always try to think about, like, what are the reasons why we watch these, like, I mean, this is an extreme version, but of like these romantic, I'm really drawn to these romantic shows like Married at First Sight and these kind of premises where you're like, oh, this isn't gonna go well. But it also kind of feels like it's that thing where you want to watch people not knowing that it's not going to go well, and to know right away, because you, I feel like I've, you know, like I've never dated an inmate and I haven't been married at first sight, but I've definitely been on the side of being like, yeah, this relationship's great. And everyone on the outside kind of watching and being
It's like, it's not just the cat. It's coming from inside the house. Run.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I mean,
yeah. It was just like a little grain of just like, I can relate to that moment. And weirdly in this show, you know, I'm just like, I mean, I want to suggest that if you've never seen, if you're starting this Lockup series, I would start with Love After Lockup, which is the first part. I would, before you get to Life After Lockup, because what's so interesting about it is that a lot of these couples, that's where the couples kind of first connect after someone gets out of jail. Right. And a lot of these people haven't met in real life, or they've met behind, you know, a glass wall.
Or so everyone thought. We'll get to it.
That's right. But like the first moments that you see them, like, free together is so weirdly like titillating and addictive, and you can just imagine like all of the like dopamine, adrenaline, like coming out of their brains, like, you know, I mean, it's like extreme Tinder date. If you've like been corresponding with someone for like 6 months on Tinder and built them up in your mind, and then you're finally allowed to see each other, but times a million, you know, just like
And then there's cameras there.
That's right. And the cameras,
and your belongings are in like a manila envelope for one of you. Like, that's really a lot.
Oh,
that's a hot fire to be forged in.
Like in every season without fail, like multiple times, like the couples, just the drive after they like are together, they'll pull over the car and just like have sex on the side of the road, because it's just like they cannot contain the attraction that has been like building up usually of just like, and I feel like those couples don't last as long because they're just like so attracted to each other in the beginning and then just like shit kind of explodes later. But like, yeah, yeah. I'm just like, it is this kind of interesting thing to watch, like when you've like in some ways had this romance that's like kind of old school and drawn out and you can finally be together. Like that really drives the relationship in the beginning, you know, and then like the reality starts to set in where
it's
like,
and then they're out and they have a smartphone and it's like, oh, I mean, yeah. Well, but let me ask you this though, because this was my initial question.
Yeah.
Is do you think that this is like intentional sort of sociological commentary on the part of the production, or do you think that's just like an unintended consequence is that you're actually getting some reality in this reality show?
I think it's unintended, but like it's definitely a reason to watch it. And I think they're happy with that, but that's not the, I mean, like this show is very Maury Povich. Like they even have that every episode of like, do you know someone who's incarcerated? Like it's real. It's like they're leaning on being on the dirtier side of this thing, but like it actually is of like it
well,
is
the
a really
Wii network is not trying to be fucking frontline, and
yeah,
I think yeah. they would actually probably be horrified to learn that we're like, as we see in such and so master's thesis, the life after lockup couples, but like if you are doing any kind of documentary project about this population, the fact is like this, that's the other thing. This is a huge population.
Yep. Yep.
So conceivably this could just keep, you know, season after season with 50 episodes each. And, occasionally, they must, as they did with Angela, run across just a born storyteller with a flair for the dramatic. In the clip we're about to hear, Angela is lighting, is it Tony?
Mm-hmm. It's Tony.
Tony's shit on fire. They live in, I think, Meridian, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I know it's Mississippi somewhere. I forget exactly where. She has found out that in the job that he could get at a motel, she thinks, has been letting sex workers stay in rooms there for free in exchange for blowies, probably. Mm-hmm. So she's burned up a whole bunch of his shit and she's kicking him out. And he's like, you can't kick me out. I have to use this address for my PO. I'm just going to let you calm down. And she's like, that's not how it works. Don't take oral sex from other people. I'm not sure how that's going to turn out. But I do know that Angela has a great future in chicken fried narration in clip 6.
And if you notice, I got a big fire going right here where I am burning up the little bit of Tony gave me, because he ain't really gave me but a bunch of letters and a hard time. That's all this mother ever gave me.
She's more beep than man, and understand she is smoking menthol 120s every second she's on screen. Angela for fucking president.
She's like a life hero. I love her so much. She is she's like also just kind of a badass. She's been on multiple seasons of this without Tony, because like there's like in like two seasons ago she went to go pick him up from a bus station and he never showed up, and she's like, oh, no. I think he's conning me. And then finally, she's like, okay, I'm going to be on the next season because Tony's really getting out this time. And then this is in the, we don't see it in love. We see it in Love After Lockup, not Life After Lockup, but that Tony, the first time she picks him up from prison. She's like, wants to have sex with him and he's not interested. He just wants to eat steak. And then,
oh my
God. She like buys him steak.
This is terrible.
Then, he proceeds, he like goes on like a crazy drug and sex binge like that night or something. Like they never end up being together because he just like kind of disappears. But the amazing thing is, and she, oh, and also, by the way, what she does for a living is she's like a counselor. She's some kind of,
yeah,
like,
yeah, that'll be in the visual aids, which you can see on Twitter and Instagram. That's at Blotter Presents in both places. But they have a little, like, you know, little Chiron cards.
Yeah.
And it's like what the spouse does for a living versus what the parolee did to get incarcerated. So it's like family and addiction counselor, and he's like a sex addict who,
right,
she's sucks. Like very it's like standing. Oh, Ange, come on, man.
Yeah, but he's also very, like, in the interviews he'll actually be like, I'm manipulating her. He'll say as much to the interviewer, like kind of like boasting about how he's kind of using her. And it's kind of heartbreaking. But then she has this friend, this male friend, that helps her search for Tony when he goes on his binge. And he's like, why are you with this guy? And he's in love with her. And he proposes to her. And she's like, now you know I'm in love with Tony. But it's
Angela.
I feel her. She's just confused in love. She likes a bad boy. She doesn't like the one that likes her, even though he's a good guy. You know, and she knows she's got problems, but what can she do? She follows her heart.
Yeah, she does. She also, there is a certain kind of Southern woman who, she, I think she's my age, Angela. She looks 10 years older, but she's going to look about the same for the next 30 years.
Oh.
And that kind of woman is like too tough to die. Like she will live to be 90 years old. I hope she does. I hope she finds real love and not, because Tony is a fucking trifler and needs to go. And I will continue watching and hope he does. But first, we got to talk about Michael.
Oh my God.
Michael.
Oh my God.
I don't know
if
Michael's the worst, but he's in the bottom five because here's the thing. He's not even evil. He just is of exactly no account.
Oh, I mean, well, I have a whole like life theory on Michael because he's really close with his mother and you meet her in the last season and she's really the matriarch where she decides, you know, who's good for him and who's not. But he has this like kind of compulsive obsession with winning women's approval.
Right.
And also, I mean, like to go back to the social commentary that you kind of like learn. I mean, this kid like has a lot, like, you know, I think he keeps like accidentally breaking his parole in the past and not for doing
that. Seems like he might maybe have some post brain injury issues. Like he might have a slight intellectual difference.
I don't know. I mean, I think he's really like good with the ladies and like he's needs to make a living and it's really hard to make money. When you've spent so much of your young life in and out of incarceration.
Yeah.
And
there's that too.
And he like seeks women's, I think he like really loves the women he loves. He's just horrible to them and he doesn't understand accountability.
Yeah.
Like it's just like, there is something like wrong with his like understanding of like morality and how to treat someone. But I actually don't think he's a bad dude. And I also think that like a lot of things are up against him. And I think he like genuinely loves who he loves, but he's super shady. And he has like a million girlfriends, apparently.
It seems like he is like inadvertently shady.
Yeah.
But I mean, and he like instantly, the minute I sort of had the outlines of his situation, which is that he has a newborn.
Yeah.
With one woman. But then he just like pieced out of state and like well out of state, like four states away to go try to win back this other woman. So here's the mother of his children having like playtime with their 4-year-old who is adorable.
Oh and my God. So sad.
The mom, I think her name is actually Sarah, is having to play Michael in this like phone game, and she like puts on a baseball cap, and watching her trying to figure out how to be Michael realistically, but without being shitty to Michael in the process. It's a lot. Here's clip 7.
It's a little sad that I have to pretend to be Michael in order for my daughter to feel like she's able to express herself to him. All right, am I ready to go?
Yep.
Okay.
Ring, ring, ring.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you come over?
No, Daddy can't come over, pretty girl.
Why?
It's far away.
Well, I can walk.
You're gonna walk all the way to Daddy?
Yes. I haven't seen you in a long time.
I know, pretty girl. I'm sorry.
I miss you.
Michael does not contribute to anything for the girls. I miss you too, pretty girl. I wish that he would help. Just give me a break sometimes.
I mean...
I don't know how Sarah's doing it. Like, she's a champ. I, like, admire the hell out of her. Because she is, like... She's got two kids. One's a newborn. She's a waitress, I think. She was paying for his phone. She was supporting him in prison. Yeah. She's, like, kind of a baller. Like, she's, like, got a nice place to live. She busts her ass. She's a really cool best friend that I'm a big fan of that comes on there that's just, like, incredibly protective of her. But she's just, like, kind of an awesome person. And
she does remind me, she's more awesome than Kayla, I would say. But Michael mostly reminded me of Stefan on Teen Mom, Young and Pregnant, but without the, Stefan is just, like, constantly defensive, aggro trifler. Michael seems a bit more pure of motive, even though he's like creating far bigger disasters.
He's no accountability.
Yeah, just, but like, Kayla sort of like, she just is like always putting Isaiah first, Isaiah first, Isaiah first. And even though she's sick of Stefan's shit, she's just like, all right. And then finally she went and got Isaiah's name changed. And like Teen Mom Nation was like, oh, thank God. Like, just go to Iowa with Luke, have your other kid, get off the show, don't look back. But there's something about this show that, like, unlike other Wii shows, I think, is like willing to just show you what's happening, especially if it's sort of like scandalous seeming, but they're not trying to tell you how to judge. Like, they want you to judge someone, but they're not steering you as much. Like, I feel bad for her. I think she should get an IUD fucking yesterday, but I don't, like, she just tried to make the situation that she had work and hope that this guy would bring it online, and he can't. So
I think he's like got some serious like fucked up like psychosexual issues. Like that was like my armchair diagnosis, where I was just like, oh, he's like compulsively after women, and like now it's equated with money and what he can get, and that's like his success because maybe he has low self-esteem. And I'm not making excuses for him because it's bullshit what he's doing, but I'm just like, oh, he's messed up in a way that's not even like he's just like kind of tragically messed up.
Amplifying that tragic messed upness is tied to compensation for this show, where the more drama his bullshit creates, often for innocent infants.
Yep.
Like, there's no negative consequence to that. So
that's right. That's right.
I would like to skip ahead to once Michael like shows up in Dallas, this poor lady is just like, she clearly knows that he can't be trusted, but you can tell that she's going to like put aside her gut instinct anyway. Her bestie B is not having even an electron of Michael's shit, and calls him forehead in this clip.
So that's actually happening.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, we didn't finally put our process in through that.
But what's to say that what you're telling me right now is like the actual truth?
I mean, no disrespect. I'm not concerned. Like, I don't want you. I'm not saying believe me or don't believe me. Because I'm the one that told Megan that I was married, and now I'm telling her that
I signed. Well, no, she found out that you were married.
Right, but I told her. I confessed to her. She asked me. I told her. Are you
married? But that's after you found out.
That's irrelevant after I found out.
No, you can't say that's irrelevant.
Megan could do way better than Forehead. I don't trust him. Like, you still ended up your ex-baby mama that you're telling me that you're over with, and now you have a newborn baby.
I mean, although I also will say, like, Michael being, like, basically at the top of the clip, no offense, but I have her digmatized, so it doesn't matter what you think of me. I was like, yeah, that is this situation. That is your story in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, Megan lost her virginity on camera to Michael, too.
Oh,
so,
like, no.
She doesn't know any better. And, like, her dad, who I love her dad. You see him in this episode, too, in this first episode, where he's just like, you are bad news, dude. And he's, like, basically, he's like, I know people in law enforcement, and I'm not afraid to shoot either. Like, he basically
amazing
tried to protect his daughters.
Go ahead, Megan Senior.
Oh, Michael.
She lost her virginity to him? Oh, yeah. No.
You see, it's
so
real.
The digmatization is even more severe.
It's for real.
That sucks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have one more clip, which I pulled mostly to highlight that you are getting some, not news you can use, but there is some like behind the scenes intel about how some of these relationships are conducted to be more intimate than the rules would seem to allow. I forget this young lady's name, but she is confiding in her friends that her child really is her.
Andrea and Lamar.
The kid is Lamar's because they, made arrangements to be intimate in prison. Here's our final clip.
To be intimate in prison in a closet is a crime. But I decided to reveal this information to my friends tonight because Lamar's off parole, so he can't get in trouble for it anymore. Lamar and I got pregnant in the prison closet. We did.
Pause. This is the first secret you've ever kept from me.
I don't even look at Priscilla and think Lamar's her father. Like, I don't honestly know how to wrap my head around it. I don't want my baby conceived in the closet, but hey, I guess it works for some people. Disgusting.
Oh my God. I mean, I think we only got the tip of the shit bird berg that is Lamar, but we did not see Lamar in that episode. Like,
Lamar is I like him. Of just like, also just like, talk about reality too, of just like, his brother was just shot in like a gang related shooting, like, and he just like miraculously survived. But of just like, you know, like Lamar, like in past episodes, like watching Lamar's journey, he's like, he was in prison since he was a teenager, and he's like, gets out and he's in his like mid 40s, you know, and he's trying to like build a life after growing up in prison, you know, and his family is amazing and they're all really close to him, but they live in like a tough area of Los Angeles, and he's just like constantly trying to like avoid going back to prison. And as like
but he also doesn't want to live in where she lives, Salt Lake.
So he meets, right. So Andrea is a Mormon. She's from Utah. Her kids, P.S., are like a reason to watch the show alone because they are geniuses. They are like these teenagers that are just like wiser than they're basically the like the like Greek chorus of the entire series.
Okay.
Where they just like weigh in and be like, Mom, why do you need a man so much to validate you? I'm just like, they're the most amazing people.
But, and they leave. You're like, oh, wow. That's awesome.
I just want to show on them. But then basically she moves her kids to California to be with Lamar. And then she's like, this isn't a good place for my kids, moves them back to Utah. And she does this kind of messed up thing where she like hides Lamar's phone and his car keys. And is like, you're staying in Utah, and kind of like kidnaps
like,
him there.
But that's not, but isn't that like a violation of his parole? So
yes, I think at the time it was too. And it was just like, he had to go back. And so he like left and went back to LA, but they do love each other. And like, the kids kind of have come around to love him too. And he's like a good dude. He's had a hard run, and she's a good woman, but like, they're very different. They have very different backgrounds, but I'm rooting for them to make it work.
I can't really blame Lamar that he'd be like, I'd be what, the eighth black person in the state. I don't know. Not sure. I'm 100 on that plan, but I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Like, you have all of these stories that are illuminating all these different thorny aspects of post-incarceration life and how difficult, like, well, he did his time, like, but that's never the fucking end of it. So how, I mean, even if we only wants us to like watch and stare at and judge the train wrecky romantical aspects of it, mm-hmm. I think it's kind of cool that they're getting people in the door and having them inadvertently and secondarily think about what it means that this country locks up so many people so young for so much bullshit.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't really have time in my life for another train wreck reality TV show like this, but since Survivor has been permanently fired from my rotation, I guess I'll add this one as well, because it was fascinating. I mean, it was super uncomfortable sometimes, but it was fascinating.
I mean it's a top priority for me in my life, so I mean, nope. I cannot recommend it higher.
Do I need to watch all 200,000 episodes that came before this, or can I just figure it out?
I think, okay, the trick is there are, like, you'll soon embrace the millions of episodes, but I think you should start, like, don't start now. Start with the last season of Love After Lockup, and then see where that takes you.
Okay, so 39 episodes to go.
Yep.
Okay. I will be texting and tweeting at you my many questions about these circumstances.
You do.
Excellent.
In local news today, bees.
Piper, if listeners would like to find out what else you're up to / tweet at you about life or love after lockup, where can people find you?
I'm at thepiperweiss.com.
Anything you're working on that we need to look out for?
Well, I'm working on a kind of mystery novel right now about music and the music industry. But in the meantime, you can check out my book that's out in the world. It's called You All Grow Up and Leave Me. It is a true crime memoir about growing up in the 90s in New York City and a weird crime that intersected my life.
And it's an excellent book. I recommend. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And curse you for getting me sucked into this reality series. Except not really. Coming up on The Blotter Presents, actually, we're off next week. But after that, it's Netflix's Aaron Hernandez miniseries, Stephanie Early Green on Amazon's Ted Bundy Project, and HBO's McMillions. Got a tip for The Blotter Presents? You can find me on social media. That's Blotter Presents on Twitter and Instagram. And in the Best Evidence newsletter, bestevidence.fyi. 2,000 paid subscribers means we'll cover the Theranos trial in person. Today's episode was sponsored by Feels. Don't forget that promo code for 50% off your first order plus free shipping at feals.com/blotter. My guest has been Piper Weiss, and she's on Twitter, like she said, at the Piper Weiss. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I confidentially inform you that I hope you'll tune in next time.